Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, you have reached American Health Crisis through Blog Talk Radio. This is Paulette Young, your host, and we have some more people on the line that will be talking about HIV in the prison. What we're going to go over specifically, HIV in the prisons and the general population. Prisoners are together in prison. Does this pose a problem? If a prisoner is HIV positive, how are they treated? If a prisoner is a drug user, should they be put with the prisoners who do not use drugs? If a prisoner is mentally ill, should they be placed in prison with prisoners who do not suffer from mental illness? How do the prisons tackle the problems of HIV/AIDS in a prison? Join us tonight. I'm your host, Paulette Young. Guest Selena Lindsay will be on the line, and a host of others. They may be on the line. They may not want to talk. Hi, Selena. How are you?
Fabulous.
Oh, great. And then I have someone in the 310 area. You want to identify yourself?
Philippa Johnson.
Okay. Hi, Philippa. All right.
Hi.
It seems like this is a topic, boy, all the research I did is like, it was very, I want to say depressing. Depressing because here we haven't gotten anywhere with this particular subject when it comes to prisoners. Seems like they're treated like animals, worse than you would do a dog. Even the dogs, they don't do the way they do humans. And I said, what a tragic. And I think one of the problems, at least in my mind, I don't think enough of us know how bad it is. Those that go to the prison, those that work in the prison, but what about the outside world? Just talking about the topic, it's horrible how they're treated. Even when it comes to them leaving the prison, it's like even if a dog left to go somewhere, they have treatment, they have more things for the for the animals, but not for human beings. And I think we need a change in this country. I know there's a lot of issues in different areas, but this is a huge one. Okay, who wants to talk first, me, Philippa, or Selena? Selena, you want to go ahead?
Well, I'll go ahead. Of course, as usual, I'm usually doing the statistical stuff. And sometimes you think you know something, like you said, and it's just astounding what we don't know. When you, number one, look at some things that are going on with correctional health, there is a department which CDC maintains some data. And inside of that data, you see, I have a problem with their data because, number one, in comparison, their so-called data or another data source, you have to look at their budget. And their budget is $465 million. And I take that and compare that to some of what they're supposed to be doing. And that becomes very interesting when you find out about the CDD funding concerning HIV and AIDS. So $72 million went to HIV and AIDS. $12.8 million went to STD. $19.9 million went to TB. And $1.1 million went to viral hepatitis. There's something wrong when we just keep hiring and hiring people and they're supposed to be doing a job. And when you add up dollars and cents, less than 25% of the money that they utilize is utilized for what they're supposed to be doing. Some of the other agenda that I looked at is when you look at diseases in prisoners, and some of those statistics, when you do, number one, I like to back up some things that I say. For those of you that would like to go and look, then you can look at a comparative study by Penrose, and it's under that same title, Diseases in Prison and Statistics. And there's another one that's called Beyond the Walls by Lloyd. And then the third one I recommend is called The Burden of Infectious Diseases among the inmates. And just as you said, it's some sad, sad business, because sometimes, well, in the first place, they're lucky if they're going to receive care from what they call a provider, which means somebody that has a contract with the prison. And then the state, it has the so-called health profile, and they all keep kind of using that word, the burden of HIV and AIDS. And then they name two others, which is viral hepatitis, STD, and TB. They are overrun with it. They don't really know what to do, and they have very few protocols in place other than, because, again, I'm a meddler, so I had the nerve to call a few numbers, and especially some of the ones that are in California, just to ask some questions to make sure I have some up-to-date data. And I wanted to know, what are we talking about in terms of the nation that is in prison that are infected? It's 1.5 million. Answer I got was because they have addictions, poverty, they're gay, transgender, and all of those have to be dealt with in one facility in which they're not equipped to do it. And so this just makes you stand back and say they're overwhelmed also with the judicial system, because it dictates that these people have to have some kind of rights. And the so-called rights they have as inmates and prisoners, the technicality is they do not have full constitutional rights. Does that mean we have to treat them like an animal? And so I asked the question, what is your goal? And they gave me back four answers. One is redistribution. Another one is deterrence. I don't even know what that means. My dictionary is not working here. Third one, which I laughed at, which is called rehabilitation, because everybody knows, for the most part, who goes to prison and gets rehabilitated? It ain't working. The next question I asked was, what is the percentage of illness? Because they don't really want to talk about HIV and AIDS. They just call it an illness, because it very often starts with a cold, dribbling noses, every now and then drainage from strange places. And the answer I got, again, is just thundering information, that 87% of those that are in prison, the technicality is most of them, 87% have an illness. 7% is usually the cause of death in prison, along with suicide, which is 30%. Just astounding, staggering information. And there is a population, because when they say why all of this, they always use poverty. And they say that the rate in prison of HIV AIDS is 3 times higher than the general population. This is a knockout.
I wanted to speak about Center of Disease Control, because I feel they're doing an excellent job as far as giving the information. The problem is Center of Disease Control is not, it's the information. They do not pass laws. They suggest what needs to be done, but it's up to society to want to do what they suggest, which is not happening. And as I've one of the things that I'm in the middle of is that HIV resolution for the state of California, which I'll be in front of between 70 to 80 people coming this Saturday to propose the testing procedure, that both tests, genetic tests and antibody tests, be done at the same time, so that people would know their HIV status sooner. So we have a problem. And the Center of Disease Control already said both tests need to be done. But they said that way back in 2007. So they can report, they can suggest, but they cannot regulate. It's up to the powers to be to do something. Right now, that's not happening. They said, I read one article, it said 2 million people are placed in prison on a daily basis. That's here in the United States. That's a lot of people. I mean, that's big money, too. So, it's, and some of these offenses is, you know, minor. They're not big deals, and they're getting long terms because they make money off of people doing minor infractions. And depends on the state how long and how many. And right now, Louisiana leads all the states in the United States as the amount of incarceration. And so I guess don't go to Louisiana. I don't know. It's like, whoa. You go there and you're subject to go to prison for even minor things. The other thing is some prisoners aren't aware they have HIV because of poor access to HIV testing and treatment. And this is outside the walls of the prison. The prison itself failed to provide adequate care and medication. So when they are released from prison, they may not have access to medication. And someone was telling me that even a week ago. They said, they let you go. It's up to you to find. How are you going to get medicine? How are you going to get insurance? Yet you're leaving the institution. They already know what your diagnosis is. Yet there's not a bridge that should be in place prior to them leaving so that they will receive the, you know, treatment.
As you said earlier, there's more protocol given to animals than there is to a human being because they don't let a dog back out of the pound unless it has some place to go and has a home and can receive adequate enough food and medical attention.
And it said it's a crisis. What can be done about it? We do need programs. I like that. I'm not sure if Phyllis is going to come on the line, but she has a program outside the prison. They need programs inside the prison also. And that's one way of helping a problem that already exists. Because one out of seven people living with HIV will go to jail or prison. They said Louisiana has the highest rate of incarceration than any other state in the whole United States. At any given time, one in 75 people die in jail or prison. In prison, the services are limited, haphazard, non-existent. There's only a handful of jails that do HIV testing or conduct voluntary testing programs as recommended by the. So they said either HIV services in prison is either interrupted, denied, or delayed. Because what happens if when they have to go to solitary confinement or something happens, then whatever they were getting, that becomes interrupted. It says when the inmates leave Louisiana prison and they receive little help in finding or returning to someone that can help them outside the walls of prison. So there needs to be a program in place already prior to them leaving prison. Those things do not exist as we speak on this radio right now. They don't exist. There's programs outside the walls, but then how do you, you know, hook the ones that are leaving to those programs? And then there's not enough. Because Phyllis, when she was on, McNeil was on the last time, her program that she has is here in Southern California, and it doesn't even exist in Northern California. And a lot of that has to do with funding. there should be automatic funding. Somebody should be seeking out programs like hers. It's, how do we have something here in Southern and the Northern don't have it? That makes to me no common sense. So the prisoners suffer because of that, and they die. If you don't get if you're on medicine for the HIV, and then you go out in the world, out of prison, and now you're off of your medicines, that is suicide. Should not even exist. But I think part of the problem is the public is totally unaware.
Well, part of it is systemic, as you said, it's a broken system. Because supposedly, when they get out, some of them can be released, and some of them are on what they call parole. And then, you know, they're supposed to go see their parole officer and what have you. And then from there, they do a little bit of steering towards sending them to see if they qualify to get a little bit of Medi-Cal, or if they're a qualified individual for supplemental income. You know, because the majority of them are, just as Phyllis said, they're declared crazy. Because you can't lock a man up for 10 years and tell him you're going to walk out of the door and have good sense. And so they're usually steer geared like that. But once they go do the Medi-Cal thing, then they can, I'm going to emphasize that word, go and take that Medi-Cal card and go seek getting some type of help, some of them. But the problem is, if you're really, really ill and you have issues and you've been locked up for 20 years and all of a sudden a door opens up for you. I had a friend that got out of prison, and way back in that time it was a Safeway. And the door slid across the floor and he took off running because he had been locked up so long he hadn't caught up with modern times as to how it worked. And the same thing happened with various items out of the store. He couldn't figure out how to open. He got so frustrated, he threw it across the room because everything changes. And he's living in a space age time. When he went in, it was a stone age. And there are just not enough things to be able to help them. They don't have what they call integration system that puts them back in society, that, you know, they go into a 60-day program to find out what the rest of the world is doing, other than the music that they can listen to. You know, they're just behind the times. And so it's a very, very hard thing. And first of all, they're prison, and they're used to being told what to do. They're not about to go do what they need to do, and they're trying to do it with nothing. Supposedly, when they get ready to leave, they have to tell the prison system where they're going. If they don't have a place to go to, then they cannot be reiterated to the street unless they go to like a halfway house or something like that. But a good majority, just as Philly said, they're just simply let go. They're back out, and it's one of the reasons that we have what they call a revolving system, because within 4 or 5 days, they find a way to get back to their house, go back to prison, because they can't survive out here.
Yeah, that's why you need programs like Phyllis McNeil mentioned last week, because her program is designed to where they don't go back to prison. And we need more of those type of programs so that it's not a revolving door. But if you don't have a program to be a part of, yeah, then what else can you do? And it's been said, it's written that the United States has the highest incarceration in the whole world. That's a lot of people.
I've done many programs, and some of the programs are, you know, because they have to be, there are widespread problems in the correctional system, and which means also you have a bunch of individuals that have very wide and gaps in what it is that's wrong with them or how to fix them outside of prison. So it's a very different animal to tackle, along with society dictates a lot of different things that you can't have them in the city in certain places, because if you can imagine, you're not going to release a prison back to Beverly, a prison person back to Beverly Hills. The city is not going to take him. They're not having him. He's going to have to go somewhere else. And so there are many, many problems, because he's a problem to Beverly Hills, not to Los Angeles. Okay, but they have a preference to dump him in L.A. And the cities are having trouble with this problem with prisoners, because they're having to deal with problems that are not their problems, which is the same thing we're seeing in terms of homeless. Because one of the things that happened in the city of Ontario, they put bans on them and said, if this problem came from Alabama, put him back on the bus and send him to Alabama. Because the whole thing boils down also to money, and they don't see that they need to deal with somebody else's problem. And again, back to some of the things that we try to do in dealing with this problem, because they're not allowing agencies to do it in the city. They're saying, get out of here. Some of what you're seeing in Los Angeles concerning the homeless, which would include some of these people that have AIDS and are prisoners. One of the reasons that it gets so broad is because they don't have adequate facilities. And every time they do a count, they come up with a different number. In addition to the fact that I'm the first one to hold up a hand and say they have a bunch of ivory tower problems, because nobody seems to understand what happens to the money. Mm-hmm. The secondary thing that happens is, like some of the ones I've dealt with, we move to the outside of cities and say, let's do something that's a little different, where we can keep them and we can keep control of them so that they're not readily able to get drugs. But some of those problems include, when you go to the outside, how are you going to get social workers to go to drive out 30 miles to come and see these individuals? We put together diversified programs, such as one that's on a ranch, and we have 24 prisons. We teach them how to virtually, ride horses, take care of animals, take care of themselves. They're in all kinds of programs that we take them to. But it's a very, very difficult task.
What's the name of this program you're talking about?
I'll send you the name of that program. And we do that in conjunction as a partner with the church.
Mm-hmm.
And there are numerous, it's out near Black Mountain. And there are numerous different ones that we've put together. In Chicago, I did one for women, which we took over like a beauty salon, and we virtually teach them the beauty business. They virtually kind of run that particular business. There's one with prisoners that we did in Temecula, and we created LLC for the prisoners, and the prisoners actually run that business to the bottom. And the largest client is the casino itself and the sheriffs, because they're cleaning the sheriff's uniforms, because it's one of the main things that they learn in prison. But these are many, many different things out there, but some things are not really targeted at some of the heartfelt, deep problems of the root of things that are in there. And it always comes back to money, as to how are these things going to happen. And then, just like you said, there are certain agencies in place, because everybody that's an agency is holding their hands up and saying, that's not my job.
Yeah, the other problem that I was reading, too, is, like, just like what's happening in prison or what's happening out here, we've talked about people here in the United States. It's 1 in 5, according to Center of Disease Control, is positive, and they don't even know that they're positive, and they're living with HIV. Now, the problem with the jail is, even though Center of Disease Control have excellent recommendations, because they recommended that, these prisons provide routine or voluntary HIV testing so that the person will know their status. that's not happening. And they gave the example of Louisiana, of like say they have 104 of those jails, only 5 offer HIV tests. So you got, and if you're waiting to show signs and symptoms, it's a known fact. It can take up to 10 years before you even know your status. And if you're waiting that long, by the time they start treatment, you're going to die. You ain't going to be here because that's too long without treatment. You had nothing. It's better to know your status as soon as possible than to wait till you're sick and then find out your status. So, and that's a problem in the prison. I was thinking that when you went to prison that they automatically tested you for the HIV or any other thing like that. They don't.
Honey, they don't waste no money. They waste no money.
Yeah, they don't do. You don't have to be tested for HIV.
No, so they don't go through no protective health screen.
Unless a woman is pregnant.
Can you imagine asking a drug addict, are you a homosexual? You know, they're not going to tell the truth. You know, the truth is virtually known by those that watch the cells, and then they try to pick them out of there and put them all together. But when they're all together, what you and I are talking about, they're still having sex behind the walls.
Yeah, and they mentioned
and
that,
they're infecting each other.
But it costs more money to let you deteriorate like that than if you go ahead and do something early on.
Yes, the ultimate nightmare.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So you really don't know how many are HIV positive in the prison because there's no test being done.
Exactly.
They're not being tested for it unless they show they're sick. If they show they're sick, then they'll run tests. And then you have to ask yourself what test. If it's the antibody test, it takes much longer to know a person's status versus doing the ribonucleic acid test, which is the genetic test that tells them in 11 to 15 days. It doesn't make sense. And I think a lot of it, I know you said it's money, but I think a lot of it is, too, the public totally unaware of what goes on in the prison. But it is, well, if you don't know that the person has it, then, hey, they receive no treatment. And HIV medication is still expensive. They said it costs on average.
Well, I'm always talking about the money because one of the first things that people have to understand that prisons are not necessarily run anymore by, when we say prisons, we're thinking it's run by the sheriff department and people that wear stars and badges. And it's done by corporate America because they have all of these outside partners. Prisons are being built by large corporations. That's who's getting his money. You know, so they hire in outsiders.
That our federal government offer little assistance also for the prisons, for treatment for the prisoners. Medicaid excludes all people that's in prison and they have HIV, they don't pay for it. There's no coverage.
Well, that's our federal government and its so-called rights of inmates, which they feel prisoners don't have any. But they like to say that they have so-called, again, I quote that, constitutional rights. But how are you going to have it if it's not, like you said, empowered by the people?
Right. And then I don't know if you remember back when they passed that Ryan White Act, that assist people that have HIV. If you're in jail or prison, it's limited. You got to be outside the prison walls to be able to come up under that act that was passed. It was to help those with HIV. And even with our government, like you have nonprofits, the ability to purchase medication at a discount. If you're in jail, you don't get that. So that's a whole population of people that's not receiving the right type of care for that particular disease at all. You go to prison, you're not getting those, you're not getting the same treatment as far as health with HIV if you're in prison. That's scary.
As Grandma says, what is the world coming to?
Then you release these prisoners that weren't treated properly out back to the world. And so that goes right back into society. How are you going to get the numbers down if we're not doing the right thing? How can you get the numbers down? If they have HIV, they're treated worse than animals. That's what I'm learning. And what can you do about it? What organization is going to take up their cross and do something to help these prisoners? If anyone's just coming on the line, we've been talking about HIVs in the prison and what's going on, some of the problems that are there. It can be due to drugs. There are no testing done on a routine basis for prisoners. So they can come in, have HIV, and don't know it, no different than you're not in prison and people don't know they have HIV. People normally want to wait till they're show signs of sickness, and then now we'll run some tests. Wrong, you shouldn't do it that way. You should get a test. Can't afford that second test? Red Cross has to do all the tests because otherwise their blood bank would be contaminated, and they don't have time to wait 3 months, 6 months to a year to find out the status of that blood. They need to know within 11 to 15 days, so they run the antibody test that looks for antibodies, and they run the genetic test, which looks for the actual gene to the virus, or the DNA to the virus. So that's a problem. Solution is we need programs that, you know, that the prisons itself need programs. There are none.
Absolutely.
And they need programs coming outside the walls to help the prisoners. They are not animals. They are human beings. We don't even do dogs that way. So why are we doing human beings this way? It just shouldn't be. Again, this is American Health Crisis, your host, Paulette Young, and we've been talking about HIV in the prison. If you want us to hear you, you have to call 858-769-4936 and press 1. I'm going to go ahead. We've been on for quite some time right now. One of the solutions I've already said is there need to be routine testing when they go into the prison and even before they come out, not wait till they show signs of sickness. And as I said before, 1 in 5 here in the United States is positive. And no one's talking about that. And they've never been tested. That's according to Center of Disease Control, which do report things, but they don't have the power to legislate. They're not legislators. So it's up to all of you that are listening to broadcasts like this or you've read it, to begin to go to your senators and Congress people and fight for a change, that there is routine testing in the prison, that there is routine testing and you're not in prison. that we have both tests to use to know a person's status, the antibody test and the ribonucleic acid test. Because without both being used at the same time, you don't know your status, because you can be positive and it's not showing because you didn't have that second test. So it's very important. So at this point in the broadcast, Selena Lindsay is going to mention some of the other nonprofits that she deals with. And Philippa, I'd like for you to mention something about Fathers and Son Coalition of America and some of the exciting things that are coming up in the months ahead.
Yes. Unfortunately, I don't have the list of items in front of me, but Fathers and Families Coalition of America has completed their conference recently in Los Angeles, and they're moving forward with developing some partnerships with other agencies and organizations to provide seminars throughout the states, throughout the United States, related to fathers and families. And we do have a planning meeting coming up this Friday, April the 12th, at the Girls Club in Los Angeles on Century. And this is to debrief about the conference that we just had and identify areas that we need to strengthen or improve for next year. But basically, Fathers and Families Coalition is focused on public policy, research, and professional development for those that are working in the field of social services, psychology, mental health, and child development.
Okay. And they also, when you do those conferences, they also offer educational credit, correct?
Yes, they do provide continuing education units. Specifically at the conference, some of the seminars may provide continuing education units, but I do know at the conference we do provide that.
Okay. And then if you want more information, Dr. James Rodriguez is CEO of Sons and Father Coalition of America, and his number is 424-789-4644.
Yeah, and we do have a website as well, Fathers and Family Coalition website, where you can find out additional information about services and programs that are coming up, as well as the national conference, which will be next year in February. I think it's the 24th. Through the 28th, 2020.
Yeah, it's a great conference for those. A lot of educational things going on.
Right.
And some of the presenters are coming from all over the globe because the same problems we have here in America, they have in Japan,
mm-hmm.
Puerto Rico,
yes.
They have in South America, so they have in Africa. So some of your presenters are coming from some of those places also. Okay, Selena, then you have the ones that you talk about and give the numbers out to.
Yeah, we're going to throw a few new ones in there this time, and we're going to start with this one, www.aidsunited.org. Please go to that website. This is a great organization, and they're on top of trying to do something about the subject matter that we're talking about, and one of the ones I've kind of reviewed, and I think they have some things going on. Another new one that we have is called OneCountryGive.com, Numana. Now, what they are doing is astounding. They have served over 40 million meals to kids. Because they have the same belief that I have, which is no kid should go to bed hungry, and that one of the things we have going on in this country is every night millions of kids go to bed hungry, and we want to eliminate hunger by 2025. So something that they're doing, when you donate to these guys, they are planning to give away a 2019 QX80. This is a SUV that is worth $91,000. So when you do that, go up to their website and check this out. It's called OneCountryGive.com. The next organization that we want to talk about, there's a little something other going on April the 14th, and it's in something that Paulette does. It's called Hands-On to Learn CPR Hands Only. This is free, and it's going to happen at the Murrieta Farmers Market, and it's being presented by Loma Linda University. So go to your website of Loma Linda University, and you'll see this event. If you're able, this is a great thing for you to learn how to do to be able to save somebody's life. Let's learn CPR. The next item on my list would be, as usual, we always talk about sowing seeds for life, which I myself am is a director, and Paulette is there doing healthcare consulting, doing the same thing she does on the radio, which is giving out information to the public to help in the community and with the daily lives. Sowing Seeds for Life is a food bank, and we are the second largest food bank in Southern California. We are located 1350 Arrow Highway. We do a lot more than give out food, everything from shoes, clothes, and various different programs. Should you like to donate or come out and volunteer, please call area code 909-293-7735 extension 232 and ask to speak to Fran Robertson. The next organization I'd like to talk about is called VeteranCareSolutions.org. Veterans Care Solutions is an organization which attempts to help veterans that are having problems, and also to help any organization that deals with veterans and would like to have some information on how to go about working with veterans. She does many seminars and is run by LaShonda Jones. The phone number over there is area code 909-329-8288. Again, the name of the organization is VeteranCareSolutions.org. The next organization is called Camp Corral. Camp Corral is for military children, with priority given to a wounded, disabled, or fallen military family. You can see what Camp Corral is doing by going to www.campcorral.org, or please call area code 855-605-1267. And inclusive with another organization that I think is doing a really fine job is called Bright Prospect. They're located at 1460 East Holt, Suite Number 74 in Pomona, California. The phone number there is area code 909-623-9007. Their priority is to low-income students to help them get through college. You can easily see what they're doing by going to www.brightprospectalloneword.org. At virtually the end of every show, I like to throw in my own 3 cents.
Oh,
and it kind of goes like this.
Wait before you do that, because I almost forgot this. There's a huge, huge health fair. It's called Care Harbor Fairplex. There's going to be free dental care, cleaning, filling, extraction, and other procedures. Free vision care, eye exams, prescription, and eyeglasses given out. And also, I hope people have a pen and pencil to write this down. free medical care, primary, specific, specialty care, women's health, immunization, and screening. There's going to be hundreds of physicians, dentists, optometrists, and other professionals will be on site to serve you. The dates and location is going to be April the 27th through the 28th of this year, and it's going to be there right at the County Fair, Fairplex, 1101 West McKinley, where the County Fair is. You must have a wristband to enter. When are they giving out the wristband? They're going to give it out on a Saturday. Once all 1,000 wristbands are given out, that's it. You can't get in after that. The locations of those to pick up your wristband on April the 20th, they're only going to do it at, on April the 20th, and that's at Washington Park in Pomona, at 865 East Grand Avenue in Pomona, and also at the Youth and Family Club of Pomona Valley, and that's at 1420 South Gary Avenue. And it begins at 10 a.m. First come, first serve, so all wristbands are given out. One wristband per person. If you want more information, you can visit the website. It's called www.careharbor.org. I placed a flyer up on my Facebook page called Healthcare Consultants. The information's up there also. But this is really good. I've gone to one of these before. I needed a couple of fillings. I got it free. I got my teeth clean. I didn't have to use any insurance or anything. So and one of the people that are sponsoring it is Supervisor Hilda Felice. So this is a big deal. But again, first come, first serve. And they're only going to do 1,000 people. That's it. So you got dental work, or, you know, someone that can't afford to pay for the glasses or eye exam. Maybe they don't have any insurance, but they're not asking if you have insurance or not. It's just it's a public service that they'll be doing. So hopefully tell your friends, tell people. Because I tell you, I went to one of these where the Dental Association put on a big one at the fair. People came all the way from Sacramento, San Francisco, because they knew, you know, if you can't afford something and you need your mouth worked on or your eyes worked on, that it was all free. So hopefully you'll consider or you'll pass that information. You can also get it on Healthcare Consultants' Facebook page. I'm going to try and figure out how I can get that flyer up on for this American Health Crisis. If I can figure out how to put that up there, I'll post it there too. Okay. Go ahead, Selena.
Okay. We're going to close out. And
yep.
Basically, my little two cents goes like this. I choose to speak out because silence is consent. I am a self-proclaimed change agent. Yes, I am an agitator. I choose to be provocative. Speaking out raises tough issues. Sometimes it makes other people uncomfortable. Moreover, making some people uncomfortable is who I choose to be. I take risks and I use myself. I tell sly stories and experiences. I share my weakness and my mistakes. I use me as the guinea pig. And basically, I have a belief, and that is to teach people to use fishing rods rather than give them things, because they're better off to be able to fish for life. This is a belief that I believe that can help those that can't help themselves. I am Selena A. Lindsay. I thank you for listening to this broadcast. Me and Paulette Young, we look forward to having you again with you on our next broadcast. Good night to all.
Good night. Thank you. Oh, we won't be on the air for the next couple of weeks. We'll be back on the last Monday in April. Thank you.
Good night.